The next case up for argument is case number 2017-814, Huber Heights City Schools Board of Education versus the Montgomery County Board of Revision. For the appellant, Ms. Allison.
Good morning, Master Commissioner Rourke. May it Good please morning. The court. I would like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal. The BTA decision in this case is unreasonable and unlawful because the Board of Tax Appeals applied the incorrect burden of proof in their decision. The BTA held that in order to prevail on appeal, the Board of Education was required to either demonstrate legal error in the property owner's appraisal report, prove that the property owner's appraiser was not competent to provide an opinion of value, or to provide independent evidence of value. The BTA arrived at this erroneous conclusion based upon its misapplication of the Bedford Rule. The property owner in this case filed the initial decrease complaint, and as the complainant, the property owner bore the burden to produce competent probative evidence to support a reduction. The only evidence submitted to the Board of Revision was the property owner's deeply flawed appraisal report, opining a value of $940,000 for the property. Without any explanation, the Board of Revision reduced the value, not to the appraised value of $940,000, but to $956,630. There is nothing in the record to indicate how the BOR arrived at this value conclusion. In its decision, the audio recording of its decision, it did state that it was based upon the property owner's appraisal, but there is no explanation as to why the Board of Revision determined a value different than that opined by the appraiser.
Is it your position that the Board of Revision has to give reasons in support of its decision?
Well, I think in order for at least for the Bedford Rule to apply, that the Board of Revision's value determination has to be based upon the appraisal evidence, and if they deviate therefrom, they at least have to explain why. So if they had said they had made an adjustment in the appraisal, that would have been a completely different case. In this case, we have absolutely no idea where the $956,630 value came from. The Board of Education appealed the BOR's erroneous decision to the Board of Tax Appeals and submitted expert appraisal review testimony, establishing that the property owner's appraisal report was so deeply flawed that it failed to constitute competent probative evidence. The question before the Board of Tax Appeals therefore became whether the Board of Education submitted sufficient competent probative evidence to contravene or discredit the evidence submitted to the BOR by the property owner. Therefore, the Bedford Rule is inapplicable in this case. This court has made it clear that Bedford applies. There are four essential elements. The property owner must file the complaint or countercomplaint. The BOR must reduce value based upon the property owner's competent, plausible evidence. The Board of Education is the appellant before the BTA, and the Board of Revision's determination is based upon appraisal evidence. We believe the Bedford Rule does not apply in this case because neither the second nor fourth element of the test have been met. First, the fourth element was not met because we're not clear exactly if the decision was based upon the appraisal evidence because we can't justify the variation from 956 to 940.
Even though they said it was?
They said it was based upon that, but there's no reason why they deviated from it. I mean, if they had determined the value to be 940 or explained why they determined it to be slightly different, that would be a whole different ballgame. But here we have absolutely no idea where that value came from. And under this court's decision in subpoena, the BTA can't affirm a value if they can't replicate it. Second, we believe that the second element of the Bedford Rule has not been satisfied in this case. The Board of Revision's reduction was not based upon competent probative evidence or even minimally plausible evidence.
Why wasn't it competent?
Well, I guess we're attacking more the probative or the at least minimally plausible. And we believe that our appraisal review testimony clearly showed that. And the BTA didn't engage in any kind of an analysis to determine whether it was. They simply threw out our evidence saying that because we didn't prove that the appraiser was not competent, that the was a legal error, or that we did not independently determine value, that our evidence was insufficient.
I mean, I don't need to tell you this, but it's fairly well settled that the appellant at the BTA has the obligation to prove a value. And I read through the transcript, and I think your appraiser was asked, does he have an opinion of value? And he unequivocally said no. I guess I don't know what the BTA is supposed to do in that circumstance when the appellant is supposed to prove a value.
Well, with all due respect, Your Honor, it would be our position that the Board of Education does not have to prove value if the Bedford test is not met. Otherwise, the Board of Tax Appeals has a duty to independently perform a de novo review of the evidence. Any party can submit new evidence in order to show that the evidence relied upon by the Board of Revision was not competent or at least minimally plausible.
Even outside the context of the Bedford rule, though, that's a principle that goes back decades and decades, that the appellant has to prove a value. Now, if you establish a legal error, perhaps, we can reverse and go back and have the BTA do it again. But if there's no glaring legal error, then it's weighing of the evidence, abuse of discretion, and...
Well, Your Honor, we would respectfully disagree. We would argue that under Lutheran Social Services and Sears Roebuck, this court has held that the Board of Education may meet its burden by producing appraisal review testimony that discredits the evidence relied upon by the property owner.
The posture in those cases was a little different. I went back and read those. The Board of Revision in both of those cases retained the auditor's value. This case, obviously, they did not. I'm sure you don't think that's a meaningful distinction, but I did notice that.
Your Honor, we would argue that that's not a meaningful distinction. In order to meet the second test of the Bedford rule, the evidence relied upon by the BOR has to be competent, probative, and at least minimally plausible. Otherwise, you're affording an improper presumption of validity to the Board of Revision decision. So to argue that the Board of Education has to come forward with evidence of value, especially in a case like this, where the property owner completely failed to meet their initial burden, that imposes an onerous burden upon the Board of Education to support value when the property owner never met their initial burden. We should be able to argue that the evidence relied upon by the Board of Revision was...
Wait, how did they not meet their burden?
Because the appraisal report in this case was so deeply flawed. The appraiser failed to value the property at its highest and best use.
What rule of law establishes that was not a lawfully...
We're not arguing that it was unlawful, Your Honor. We are arguing that it was not sufficiently probative or at least minimally plausible because he failed to value the property at its highest and best use. Okay. And we submitted expert opinion appraisal review testimony to establish that fact. And again, this all goes back to the burden of proof. This goes back to the fact that the BTA never even considered whether our appraisal review testimony sufficiently refuted the appraisal report submitted to the Board of Revision. They simply said that we had to prove legal error, incompetence, or a new opinion of value. And we just don't agree that's the case, especially in cases where the Bedford rule does not apply.
Do you agree that the default value coming up to the BTA was the Board of Revision's value?
So
it would have been 956. I know you wanted 1.8.
We would argue that in cases where the Bedford rule does not apply, that the BTA is not prohibited from reverting back to the Board of Revision's the auditor's value. Because, if the Bedford rule doesn't apply, it's a simple weighing of the evidence. I will also note that in their brief, the property owner claims that and here's the second thing, the BTA even improperly applied the Bedford rule because they said it was satisfied at the Board of Revision level. And I guess that's kind of the crux of our whole argument. The Bedford rule can't be satisfied at the Board of Revision level because the BTA performs an independent de novo review of the evidence. So the Board of Education should be permitted to come in. And this court has said that simply arguing against the validity of the appraisal testimony is not sufficient, but the Board of Education can, in the proper case, make their case by presenting appraisal review testimony discrediting the appraisal submitted to Board of Revision.
And it's your position they didn't evaluate Mr. Sprout's testimony?
We believe that they evaluated in an improper context. We believe they should have evaluated to determine whether Mr. Sprout's testimony was sufficient to prove that the property owner's appraisal report was not competent, probative, or at least minimally plausible. Whereas here, they didn't do that. They simply looked for legal error, incompetence, or whether we established a different opinion of value. Obviously, we don't believe that appraisal review testimony would be sufficient to even prove whether or not it was incompetent or legal error, that's not necessary. These are legal concepts that would be proven through legal argument and cross-examination. So essentially, under the Board of Tax Appeals ruling, appraisal review testimony would never be credible and can never prove anything, which is in direct contravention of this court's decision in both Sears Roebuck and Lutheran Social Services. Had the BTA applied the correct burden of proof, they would have found Mr. Sprout's appraisal review testimony sufficient to prove that the evidence relied upon by the Board of Revision was not probative or minimally plausible. As I already stated, the appraiser failed to value the property at its highest and best use. He failed to perform an income approach, even though the property was an income-producing property. His sales comparison approach was deeply flawed and unreliable for many reasons set forth in Mr. Sprout's testimony. And the problem, again, is that the Board of Tax Appeals did not even evaluate this evidence to determine whether or not the Board of Education met its burden of proving that the evidence relied upon by the Board of Revision was not probative or at least minimally plausible. For these reasons, the Board of Education respectfully requests that the court remand this matter to the BTA with instructions to consider and weigh the BOE's appraisal review evidence to determine if the BOR's reduction was based upon competent, plausible evidence. I will reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you. For Globe Products, the property owner, Mr. Janus.
Yes, thank you. May it please the court. Good morning, Master Commissioner O'Rourke.
Morning.
It is our position that the Bedford rule was properly applied in this case, that there was competent and at least minimally plausible evidence that was produced at the BOR level, and that when, by the time it got to the Board of Tax Appeals, they properly applied the Bedford rule to hold that the Board of Education did not provide any evidence which would overcome the decision that was made in the Board of Revisions, and applying the Bedford rule, they therefore did not meet their burden to provide a value that was different than the Board of Review.
What's your response to the assertion that your appraiser opined a value of 940, the Board of Revision adopted a value of 956, so the Board of Revision actually did not adopt your appraiser, the owner's evidence, was not persuaded by the owner's evidence? I think I'm characterizing her argument correctly. If I'm not, I'm sure she'll say it.
I believe that there was competent evidence that was in the appraisal report. There was various information in that appraisal report because there were various sales, comparable sales that were reviewed. The Board of Revision said they relied on that competent evidence, and they came to a determination of the 956. They don't specifically state how they did that in their decision, but they did specifically state they relied on that information and took the information from the auditor's report. If that was a problem, I believe the Board of Education should have brought that up in the Board of Tax Appeals. Their approach in the Board of Tax Appeals was to say that the entire appraisal report was insufficient, not that the Board of Review didn't follow specifically and directly the appraisal report. By the time this got to the Board of Tax Appeals, the Board of Education relied on Mr. Sprout's testimony to come to the conclusion that as a matter of law, Mr. Harris's appraisal report was inappropriate and could not be relied upon. This court in the Lutheran Social Services case had a similar situation where Mr. Martin was the owner's expert, Mr. Sprout was the Board of Education's expert, and the Supreme Court said that there was no legal error shown. So therefore, as a matter of law, Mr. Martin's report was not, still had probative evidence to it. And at that point in time, it comes down to a competition between the two experts' opinion, and the Board of Tax Appeals is the entity that determines the credibility of the witnesses and the facts in the situation. And they are entitled to determine which of those two competing opinions is the more appropriate or probative. That's what the Board of Tax Appeals did in this case. It specifically stated that it looked at Mr. Sprout's report or his opinions. And in reviewing the materials that were before them, they did not believe that they didn't specifically state this, but their opinion would lead to the conclusion that they did not believe that Mr. Sprout's opinions overcame the opinions that Mr. Harris had in his report. They had some criticisms of that, but they did not indicate that it wasn't an appropriate opinion. They didn't indicate, Mr. Sprout also testified that he had no opinion as to whether the Board of Revisions was correct or wrong in adopting Mr. Harris's report. Given that, he couldn't say that it was an inappropriate report. He just had some questions about it, and he even agreed that he would have had to ask further questions of Mr. Harris because he had questions about the report, but he wasn't saying that Mr. Harris's report wasn't probative or wasn't admissible. He was saying he just had some questions with it. It then reverts to the Board of Tax Appeals to determine which of those two competing experts they agree with.
And so your friend on the other side assigns significance to a statement in the BTA's decision that Mr. Sprout did not identify a, quote, legal error, end quote. Do you have a response to that? Was it, I don't know if I'm articulating my question. Are you following where I'm going with this? Was it his job to art? Did they frame the inquiry incorrectly, I guess is what I'm saying. Was it the appraiser's job to point out a legal error, or was it to identify evidence that might lead to another opinion of value? You see where I'm going with that?
I do, but okay. I believe what it says is if Mr. Sprout had found a legal error, then as a matter of law, the BOR's decision would not have been appropriate. And that was the same issue that came up in Lutheran Social Services. And that case states, the BOE also insists that the BTA, as a matter of law, had to reject Miller appraisals as lacking probative value. The overriding objection is alleged lack of comparability of rent and sales comparable to the subject properties on account of age and amenities. And the court then said, we see nothing about Miller's appraisals that constitutes the kind of legal error that would, as a matter of law, make it inappropriate for the BTA to adopt Miller's opinions of value. As for the quality of Miller's comparables and the propriety of the adjustments, that determination lies within the province of the BTA as the finder of fact. And so it's our position that the Board of Tax Appeals correctly set forth the application of the Bedford Rule to this case. Sears said that in an appropriate case, you could have an appraisal review opinion. Sears didn't say what that case was or how it would come about, but it appears that if the Board of Education would have to provide opinions that swayed the Board of Tax Appeals, that the appraisal report that the property owner submitted was so inappropriate that even though it was competent, it had to be rejected by the Board of Tax Appeals. So it's competing. This is a situation of there is no legal problem with Mr. Harris's opinion report. So they have to then discredit it to such an extent that the Board of Tax Appeals believes Mr. Sprout's opinions over Mr. Harris's. The Board of Education did not, in the competing experts' opinions, provide sufficient appraisal review opinions to overcome Mr. Harris's opinion as to the valuation of that property. The BTA, as the finder of fact, has the ability to determine between those competing experts which ones applies. The BTA can accept all, some, or none of an expert's opinion. In this case, they favored, based upon the way in which they wrote their decision, it's apparent that they ruled that Mr. Harris's opinions were more probative than Mr. Sprout's. And therefore, the Board of Education did not meet its burden under the Bedford rule that the Board of Education had to put on evidence, some evidence, that overcame that the Board of Review did not provide the appropriate valuation based upon the evidence that was presented before it. And the Board of Education did not provide Mr. Sprout's testimony in the Board of Revisions, so that entity didn't have the opportunity to do that. By the time it got to the BTA, the Board of Revisions valuation became the default valuation pursuant to the Bedford rule, and the Board of Tax Appeals reviewed the evidence that was presented before it, both testimony of both experts, and believed that the Board of Education did not meet its burden to provide sufficient evidence to overcome the Board of Revisions valuation of the property and the reduction in the value of the property based upon Mr. Harris's evaluation and his opinion as to the fair market value of that property. The Board of Education wants the auditor's value to be reinstated, but under the Bedford rule, the auditor's valuation is not any longer the default valuation, so it can't be reapplied. And the only time that that would even be possible is if there is absolutely no competent evidence upon which the Board of Review issued its decision. Here, there is competent, credible evidence that was presented to the Board of Review. At the time it was presented, Mr. Harris's opinions were appropriate, they were competent, and at least minimally plausible. Therefore, by the time the Board of Education got to the Board of Tax Appeals and presented Mr. Sprout's testimony, it had to overcome Mr. Harris's opinions, and it failed to do that. So it would be our position that the Board of Tax Appeals rendered the correct decision, and we would ask this court to affirm that decision.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Allison, you have 4 minutes, 16 seconds.
Okay, thank you. Again, I just want to be perfectly clear. This is a burden of proof case. Well, counsel argues that the Board of Tax Appeals weighed Mr. Sprout's appraisal review testimony along with Mr. Harris's to find that Mr. Sprout did not discredit Harris's report. This is exactly the type of analysis that the BTA did not engage in this case, although it was clearly their duty to do so. They only said because he did not perform determine legal error or legal incompetence that his testimony was irrelevant. So the BTA has at least an obligation to consider whether Mr. Sprout's appraisal review testimony proved that Mr. Harris's report was not probative or at least minimally plausible. We believe if they had, they would have come to a different conclusion. Also, in Columbus Pike, this court recently made it very clear that Bedford does not apply in a case where the Board of Revisions reduction is based upon evidence that is not competent, probative, or minimally plausible. Therefore, that had to be the standard of review before the Board of Tax Appeals. And if Bedford doesn't apply, this is a whole different case, especially because it would be appropriate for the Board of Tax Appeals to revert to the auditor's value if Bedford does not apply, because there's nothing else in the record upon which the Board of Tax Appeals could independently determine value. Also, I just want to clarify that Mr. Sprout did testify at the Board of Tax Appeals that if he were a member of the Board of Revision, he would not have adopted Mr. Harris's report. So he clearly believed that it was so, he testified that there were so many errors that it did not constitute minimally plausible evidence. With that, I think that's all I have.
All right, thank you. The case will be submitted and you will be advised of our decision. As I mentioned earlier, we're now going to take a 10-minute recess, and then Master Commissioner Mendoza will hear the next three cases. Marshall?